If you look at the first and last verses of that reading, you'll see what this is all about. Verse 32, and they were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them, and they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And the last verse, and Jesus said to Bartimaeus, "Go your way, your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed Jesus on the way. This is a passage all about following Jesus. Well, to say to somebody today that you follow somebody, or to ask someone who you follow, means something entirely different, doesn't it? She is the most followed lady on the planet. And those two are second and third. And as you'll know, Twitter doesn't demand much of you, does it? You just need to keep in touch. Barack Obama's not going to get really cross if he finds out you haven't sort of checked him out for a day or two. They're very undemanding, aren't they? And what about this Muse song? All about following. Follow me, you can follow me, and I will not desert you now. Look at the benefits if you follow. You're protected, you're kept safe, and you always have someone with you. No great demands on the one doing the following. Lots of benefits. Anyone know who that is? Yes? Shackleton. That is Ernest Shackleton, who may or may not have penned this advert. Men wanted for hazardous journey, low wages, bitter cold, long hours of complete darkness, safe return doubtful, honor and recognition in event of success. Yes, that was a slightly greater demand. Winston Churchill, similar sort of demand. I have nothing to offer but blood, sweat, toil, and tears. Speaking about himself, first of all, what he was going to offer, but then saying, if you're coming with me down this road, that's what you're going to have to offer as well. And of course, something very similar from Jesus that we saw in chapter 8 a few weeks ago. Whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. So maybe you sit here tonight as somebody who is disappointed in following Jesus. Maybe it hasn't been what you expected. Maybe you felt a bit let down. Maybe you felt that Jesus has deserted you at times. Maybe you felt you haven't been kept safe or protected. Maybe you're wondering whether it's worth going on following Jesus. Or maybe you're here tonight as somebody who still hasn't decided whether that's the way you're going to live your life or not, and you want to find out more about what's required. Well, tonight's a good place to be then. This is a good place to be because we're thinking about following Jesus tonight. We're going to think just how different following Jesus is from living like everybody else does. Just look back to verse 31, the verse before our passage tonight. Probably a link in verse. But many who are first will be last, and the last first. We understand first place, we understand last place. We don't quite understand the reversal. Some years ago, I was involved in organizing a quiz night at church. And we had decided beforehand that when it came to awarding the prizes at the end, because it was a church quiz night, we would follow Jesus' pattern here. So the team that came first rewarded the booby prize. At least they got something to take home. And the team that came last got first prize. Now, you will have been to some of these quizzes. You will know that some people come and take these things exceedingly seriously. There was lots of angst and aggravation around the place and much muttering when the results were announced. Because this is very contrary to the way in which we think. First, last, last, first. To be great, we're going to discover, is to serve and to suffer. Because this is the way of Jesus, therefore this is the way of his kingdom. First of all then, will we follow Jesus the crucified? That's verses 32 to 34. This is the third time that Jesus has predicted what's going to happen when he gets to Jerusalem. They're now very close, Jericho, just 15 miles away. It's all very much on the agenda. Jesus is deliberately and quite consciously now setting out on the last leg. And so death is very much in view. Verse 33, "See, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they will condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And they will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise." Now this, of course, is what corrupt human authorities do. They put to death innocent people for their own ends, to aid their political aims and intentions. Jesus is expendable. He will be mocked, he will be crucified, and he will die. But notice who has the last word, the last sentence. Not the authorities, because Jesus will rise. So suffering, humiliation, death will be followed by resurrection glory. But there's no escaping the former to reach the latter. You see, if you're going to follow Jesus, you've got to go to Jerusalem. If you're going to follow Jesus, you can't escape the crucifixion. It's not like you've got a new computer game, you chat to a friend, and he's given you a cheat so you can get around a particularly tricky section of the game and get to your destination. There's no escape, there's no shortcut, there's no cheat. You can only get to resurrection glory via the cross. That was how it was for Jesus, that's how it is for us too. And that means we have to take on board the shame and the embarrassment of crucifixion. Crucifixion was a death reserved for the lowest of the low. It wasn't a topic of conversation in polite society, and to the Jew, anyone who was crucified was cursed by God. That's quite a famous bit of graffiti found in the Roman catacombs. Jesus on the cross, but given an ass's head, just to show how foolish and stupid the idea of a crucified God could be. And as we've said before, there are those in the church today who would mock the idea that Jesus died in our place. Jesus died for others to take the punishment that was due to them on himself. Example of unjust suffering, yes. Substitutionary sacrificial death, no. So you see, just as there was no other way for Jesus to travel than to Jerusalem and to crucifixion, so there is no other way for us to travel either if we're going to follow him. And therefore, the mocking and the suffering that were his are going to be ours as well, if we're going to follow a crucified Jesus. Or maybe we'd prefer to follow the way of the world, verses 35 to 42. And that's exactly, of course, what we find the disciples doing. How disappointing it must have been for Jesus once again. He's talked about his death, he's talked about the climax of everything, and what do? They just get it wrong. James and John come up to Jesus and say to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." Now, you can think back to your childhood days. That was exactly the sort of thing you'd ask your parents or a great uncle or a great aunt who was kind to you. "Please do whatever I ask you." And Jesus said to them, "What do you want me to do for you?" And they said to him, "Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left in your glory." You see, they made the mistake of thinking that in going to Jerusalem, Jesus is coming to bring in the kingdom. He will be acclaimed king in Jerusalem and be seated on the throne there and then. And so therefore they want to make sure that they've got the best seats in the house right next to Jesus. Look down to verse 41. The 10 aren't really any better. Then the 10 heard it, they began to be indignant at James and John. And they're indignant because James and John have got off the blocks first. They've asked the question first. It was the question they all wanted to ask, and we sit next to you, but James and John got there first. They're all as bad as each other. But they've missed the point of what Jesus has just said, haven't they? Jesus isn't going straight to kingship and enthronement. Not in that sense. Where is he going? He's going to Jerusalem to die. And who is it who is granted to be placed on Jesus' right and Jesus' left? In chapter 15, we read that those places were reserved for two robbers crucified with him. And with him they crucified two robbers, one on his right and one on his left. So Jesus says to James and John, can you drink the cup that I've got to drink? Can you be baptized in the suffering I've got to endure? And out of their ignorance, they both, of course, say, yes, of course we can. But only one person could drink the cup of God's wrath that Jesus refers to here. Only one person could bear that overwhelming weight of suffering. And that was Jesus himself. Nobody else could possibly do that. Although both James and John would suffer for the gospel. And as we know in Acts chapter 12, James will die a martyr's death. The world's way is very different. It's wanting my place and my position. In town last week, I walked past a sort of a couple of mothers and a bunch of children. And one of the children, about five or six probably, said, when I am king, I'm going to make my friends. Now, I didn't hear any more because I'd walked past. When I am king, I'm going to make my friends. Now, it was a nice thing. I don't think it was a nasty thing. He wasn't saying, I'm going to make my friends do something nasty or serve me or something. It was going to be a nice thing for his friends. And it seems to me that is a very human attitude. It's a very adult way of behaving. The horizon for our sort of self-delusion is enormous, isn't it? When I am king, when I'm in charge, and I'm going to make sure that to all those around me benefit as well. We've seen it time and time again with African dictators finding their safe haven with their billions somewhere else. We've seen it in Russia, haven't we? With friends of the president being able to pick up the utilities and the state-owned industries for an absolute pittance and make an absolute fortune as a result. And of course, we behave better over here. But the expenses scandal isn't that long ago. There's a play in the West End at the moment called Duck House, just drawing one's attention back to it. And I had a friend in the civil service some years ago, and he was just amazed at how quickly ministers got involved in the Cash for Questions scandal. As somebody's helpfully said, all power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Sin has its way of turning the best of intentions, the most selfless of motives, into this self-aggrandizement, this grabbing to myself what I can. And the benefits, of course, are not always financial, are they? For some, it's simply the drug of power, of being in charge, of being in control. For others, it's wanting to exercise that power over others. That's where we get the buzz from. And for others still, it's using a position of power to benefit others and so to put them into our debt. All sorts of ways in which we can say, no, I prefer the way of the world. When I'm king, I'm going to make sure that my friends and my family get a slice of the cake as well. In verse 42, Jesus says, this is how the leaders of the world behave. You know that those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. That's the way of the world. That's what we are invited to be part of. And the question is, will we choose to live that way? Is that the way we'll follow or not? Will we then follow Jesus the servant? Verses 43 to 45. Jesus says, "But it shall not be so among you. But whoever will be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." You see, the way of Jesus' kingdom is different because Jesus' way was different. Nobody deserved more honor and glory and power and authority than he did. But he chose not to grasp at that equality. He chose to serve rather than to be served. And by what he accomplished, his followers may do likewise. Now, what he did on the cross, the way in which he laid down his life there, was a one-off, only possible for him to do. But laying down your life for Jesus, laying down your life for the sake of the gospel, putting your life on the line for your fellow believers, is something that all who follow Jesus are called to do. And there are some great stories of folk who've laid down their life for Jesus and friends and family and fellow believers through the centuries, some very recently. So just as Jesus chooses to suffer, so must we. Just as Jesus found greatness through suffering service, through being a slave to all, so must we. Whoever will be great among you must be your servant, and whoever will be first among you must be slave of all. But what if, you might be thinking, what if I deliberately set out to be great by serving? What if I decide I'm going to find greatness in suffering? Will I achieve the goal? Well, of course, the answer is no, because the goal is not to be great. That's the point. The goal is to serve. The goal is to be slave of all, because that's what it means to follow Jesus. So to follow Jesus the servant, I will no longer seek my own glory. I won't seek position, comfort, wealth, reputation at the expense of others or at the expense of Jesus. In fact, I'll go beyond that. I won't just not do those things. I will seek the best of other people. Even if in the situation I'm in, I'm the only one who's doing that, and therefore more disadvantaged, we might think. I'm going to ask myself questions like this. How then can I serve? How can I make my life better for others? As someone who has had a habit, an unfortunate habit of being far too quick and sharp with my language over the years, I have to say to myself, pause. How can I say that in a way that's going to help people? How can I phrase that question in a way that's going to be constructive rather than destructive? I'm going to say, how can I put myself out for you? How can I seek your good, regardless of what cost there might be for me in that? And as a bloke, I'm tempted to go for the one-off glorious moment of sacrifice, the one big thing that draws all the attention. But of course, what's required is the day-to-day commitment to kindness and thoughtfulness. That's what's required. So is that the way we're going to do? Are we going to follow Jesus? Jesus the servant and live as he did? Well, the sadness in this passage is the ignorance of the disciples, isn't it? They don't seem to have grasped who Jesus is, and they certainly don't seem to understand what he's going to do. And the contrast with Bartimaeus makes it even greater, doesn't it? They get to Jericho, they're going out the other side, there's a blind beggar by the side of the road. When he hears that it's Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, Son of God, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him, telling him to be silent, but he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." He's the only one in Mark's Gospel who calls Jesus by this name. More of that significance next time. But you'll notice also, on both occasions, he cries out for mercy. He knows that he deserves nothing. His only hope is that Jesus might be merciful to him. Did you notice what Jesus says to him? Verse 51. "What do you want me to do for you?" Which is an echo, it's a repeat of verse 36. Jesus said to James and John, "What do you want me to do for you?" That request was impossible. It could not be met. This request of Bartimaeus is met. And here we have the last healing miracle in Mark's Gospel. You'll notice verse 52. Jesus says to him, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." What does he do? He doesn't go his way, does he? He goes Jesus' way. He chooses to follow. Because Bartimaeus has got it. He knows it's because of Jesus' mercy that he can follow. And that's a helpful reminder for us, isn't it? I can't follow because I'm strong and tough. I can't follow because I'm really a great servant. I'm just a brilliant slave. I can only follow because Jesus is merciful. I can only follow his example on a daily basis because of his mercy. Jesus said, "The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Let's bow our heads and let's seek Jesus' mercy together now. We acknowledge that all too often we've followed the way of the world and not Jesus' way. We acknowledge that all too often we haven't sought for mercy, but have thought we were good enough and we could do it.